Well, the first thing I better do is wish my lovely wife a happy birthday. Happy birthday, honey. She, well, I can't say how old she is. 39. Not really. That's what my mom always used to say. She gave us specific instructions. If anybody asks how old your mother is, just tell them 39. And it's better to do that than suffer the consequences. No, there would have been no consequences. You know, we do that. We play games with our age, and sometimes I don't. I've never been ashamed of my age. I'm the big 6'5", and my wife will be close to that tomorrow. See, I gave it up. Okay, so now that I've confessed, let's talk about what's going on in the automotive world. You know, one of the most important things as far as a car is concerned is not only to be able to go, stop, but also to be able to steer. You got to be able to control your direction. And there are several different types of systems that control that. Now, I happen to be having a problem with two old vehicles right now. One is a 1966 Mustang Fastback, complete restoration, but the steering is awful. It's got about, I would say, 4 inches of play in the steering. Now, there's a little nut that's on top of the steering gear that you're supposed to be able to turn and tighten down. And over time, you know, the steering gears, all those little gears that are meshing together inside that box are wearing out. And so this one is completely worn out, so I had to replace it. Well, it just so happens that on this particular application, most people pull the engine out of the vehicle to replace the steering shaft because you can't just replace the gear because it's made with or into the steering shaft. They're one piece. Not a great design, Mr. Ford. But anyway, we were able to finagle around. You know, I just told my technician, I said, I've got a YouTube video here. And he kind of rolled his eyes at me. And I said, it tells you how to do this without pulling the engine. I really don't want the engine pulled. He said, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. So he watched the video and just did what they said. And it worked. Voila. You can learn a lot watching YouTube videos. The other vehicle I'm having a problem with has a different problem. It has extreme understeer. Now, it's kind of hard to explain understeer and oversteer. Because if you start explaining in a technical way, your audience is going to go to sleep. If you use a non-technical way, then they think that you're making fun of them. But so I'm not going to do either. I'm just going to say oversteer is when you turn and the car responds quickly. Understeer is when you turn and the car doesn't respond quickly at all. And so that is the problem with this Toyota Land Cruiser. It's 1988. FJ62 that was restored completely in, well, the invoice was October 26, 2011, so it's not that old of a restoration. But I would not want my wife or my kids to drive this vehicle because it is very super unresponsive when you turn the steering wheel. Now, I know Toyotas aren't that way, so there's some kind of a problem, and I've got to get my technicians to look at it. You know, if somebody were to buy this vehicle, which I did, I paid really big money for it. It's a, like I say, a complete restoration done to a very high level. And you wouldn't suspect it's going to have this kind of a problem. I did not test drive the vehicle before I bought it. Had I done so, I probably would have asked them to help share the cost or at least figure out what's going on with that vehicle because, now who knows what it's going to cost me. I may have to put a new steering gear on it. But, you know, that's the price that you pay when you don't test drive something, right? Now, you don't see many cars made today that don't have power steering, and most of the steering systems are electric now. Earlier, they got power from a pump, which was driven by a belt, and it was, you know, pretty crude system. Today, it's electric. And what happens if you're electric, if you lose electric power in your car? Well, that car gets really hard to steer. Kind of like it did when you lost power before because the pump wasn't working and then you lost the ability to have that little extra boost when you turn the steering wheel. Now, this Mustang that I was telling you about does not have power steering. The Toyota Land Cruiser does. There are several different types of steering systems. The most common that you see today is called rack and pinion steering. More than likely, the car that you're driving or the SUV or the crossover that you have is rack and pinion. It's a very simple system. It works really well. And it's been, it was used in race cars primarily up to, about 25 years ago. And then they started putting rack and pinion steering in regular everyday cars. Other types are worm and roller type steering gear, a worm and wheel type steering gear, recirculating ball. That was probably the most common type of steering gear, in the 50s and 60s and 70s before they went with, rack and pinion. And then there's one called cam and roller. Now, again, I'm not going to get into all the details, but, and you don't really need to know what you've got, what you're using. You just need to know if you have an issue, and they tell you you're going to have a new rack. What's a rack? And, you know, they should do a better job explaining that. Well, it's, your rack and pinion gear is bad. What's that do? Well, that's your steering. Well, thanks for telling me. Sometimes we in the auto industry take too much for granted that people know what we're talking about. Electric power steering is the, like I say, the most common. You're going to be seeing a lot more of that, because it's, you know, you don't have a whole lot of moving parts. Still involves a pump and fluid, but the electricity is doing the work as opposed to, a belt being driven, turning a pump and making it work that away. Have you ever had a power steering fluid leak? Well, that's something you don't have to worry about when you have electric power steering. So there's one advantage. Now, what I'm a little bit concerned about are electric brakes. Brake by wire. That doesn't sound real comforting to me, does it to you? Where right now, if my brakes go out on my vehicle, I still have brakes. I just have to push really hard because I have no boost that's applying the brake fluid and sending it to the wheel cylinders, which is actually exerting pressure on usually the pads, because most of them have disc brakes, and clamping down on that spinning rotor and slowing me down. A lot of moving parts there, a lot of different things that can go wrong. But imagine eliminating the fluid and not having a master cylinder, a brake booster, not having fluid going through lines, you just have a wire. So what happens when you lose power? Well, I don't know if they have that one figured out yet. No, they probably do. There's probably some type of emergency braking that takes place if you lose power. I have electric parking brake on my F-150 now. You may have that on your vehicle. Remember when you used to have to push this thing, ratchet down in order to set your parking brake? If you set your parking brake, it's amazing how many people don't. I'll give you a good reason to set your parking brake. You can wear out your transmission if you don't. Yep, there's a little cog in your transmission that, you know, if you put it in park, it falls into place and blocks your gears. And so basically keeps you still. If you do not set your parking brake first, it puts a lot of tension on that little cog. And you should always, this is how you're supposed to park your vehicle, especially when you're on a hill. Set your parking brake first, then put it in park. And that will save your transmission. How about that? See, that's the kind of stuff you learn on My Car Guru, and it's very true. So with that incredible information, I'm going to take my first break and be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. So I did order an F-150 Lightning. You know what that is? That's the new electric F-150. I ordered one for myself. Right now I'm driving a Power Boost F-150. What that is a hybrid F-150. And it will run around town. It will get, supposed to get 24 miles to the gallon around town and 24 miles to the gallon on the highway. I did confess the other day that I'm not getting near that because I was smart enough to lift my truck, put a leveling kit on it, and put larger tires and heavier tires on it. So that dropped me about 4 miles per gallon. Smart move. Right before an energy crisis or fuel prices going up. But I got a notice from Ford about my ordered F-150 Lightning, and they keep sending me these things every few days just trying to get me excited about it, and I am somewhat excited. I used to get a lot more excited than I do now about stuff like this. I am not excited about trying to find chargers. Of course, I'll mostly use it in East Tennessee and this general area. I'll be able to charge up at home and drive. According to the most recent EPA test, the Lightning truck went 320 miles on a charge. I won't have to have any oil changes. I won't have to spend any time at a gas pump. And I'll get a $7,500 federal tax credit when I buy it. So the federal government, thank you, folks. Your taxes are going to help me buy an F-150. I don't know how happy you are about that, but that's, they are paying. You know, they wanted to raise that to $12,500 just to get people to switch over to electric. But I'm going to give you regular reports on the status of this thing. I'm more excited about the front trunk than I am anything, because when you raise the hood, what used to be under there was an engine. Now it's just a big open space. So I'll have the bed of my truck, and then I'll have my frunk. That's what they call it. And I'll be able to use both places to, instead of filling up my back seat with stuff, I will be able to put it in my frunk. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about anything that comes from Ford these days, if it arrives. We're going to have one of these F-150s, not just mine, but we're going to have another one that you can come down and test drive. It is a just a demonstration unit, and we'll be keeping it for 6 months, kind of like we did the Mach-E Mustang. It's really just called the Mach-E, the electric Mustang. But we had a lot of people drive it, and a lot of people changed their minds about electric vehicles once they did drive it. But, you know, still, we have that charging issue. Again, if you just use it around town or you know, drive to Knoxville and back and things like that, it's fine. It's just my problem is getting on I-26 and trying to make it to the beach and then find some place to charge. Maybe that's going to get better with all these subsidies that the government's throwing at different companies to set up more charging stations. I saw a picture, I think I mentioned this yesterday. It was a photograph of a Tesla charging station. I think they had 8 or 10 different charging stations, and there were 15 cars waiting in line to get charged. The average time that it takes to charge one of those cars, just to get it to 80%, is about 40 minutes. That's a pretty long wait, isn't it? I mean, I'd run out of things to look at on my phone in that period of time. Just, I like the freedom of a gas pump. I'm sorry. That crazy governor out in California, what's his name? Newsom? Yeah. Gavin Newsom. He is offering car owners 400, well, he's wanting to. It hadn't passed to his legislature yet, but he's wanting to offer $400 in rebates and a partial gas tax halt or pause. He's calling it a pause. I mean, those Californians can't give up their taxes. But it's actually totals up to $11 billion in relief for people who live in California because of the gas prices there. You think they're high here, go to San Francisco. I mean, it's a totally different ballgame out there. But I really believe that's what they're going to try on us at some point. Is now, it depends on who's in the White House, obviously. But as long as certain people are there, they're going to do everything they can to make gasoline scarcer and more expensive, because that pushes people, I guess it makes people think more about the electric car. But where's all that electricity come from? Well, I hate to tell them, but most of it around here is from burning coal and natural gas. I mean, there's some comes from water and very little from wind. Here's the actual breakdown. Natural gas is 40% of our electricity production. Coal is 19%. Nuclear is 20%. Petroleum products, 1%. And renewables, and this is nationwide, is 20%. So that would be wind. Of course, there's not much of that here, 8.4%. Hydroelectric, which there's quite a bit from our TVA system, 7.3%. Solar, 2.3%. Biomass is 1.4, and geothermal is 0.4. So 59% of the electricity that we generate is generated with the help of fossil fuels. So granted, electric vehicles seem on the surface to be more environmentally friendly, right, to gas vehicles. They don't have an exhaust pipe. They produce no emissions. However, and this is a fact, building electric vehicles creates more greenhouse gas emissions than producing an equivalent gas-powered vehicle. I can give you some statistics and proof. Basically, the CO2 emissions from making a battery are higher because of the types of chemicals that go into the battery, or minerals, I should say. So your car has a battery, but it's a small battery, and it's a lead-acid battery, whereas electric vehicles use lithium-ion batteries until they figure out some type of solid-state technology. It's like the batteries found in a cell phone or a laptop. And the truth is, lithium-ion batteries require a lot more energy to produce. It's because of the refinement and, well, the extraction and refinement of metals like lithium, nickel, and cobalt. And they're also harder to recycle than lead-acid batteries. So there's a lot to figure out here. Volkswagen, which has probably the most ambitious electric vehicle investment plans of any other automaker, said that part of its agreement with LG Chemical, that's one of their main battery suppliers, requires that company to use only environmentally friendly sources of electricity, which would be renewables. Also, Tesla is intending for its battery factory in Nevada to one day run entirely on renewable energy. But right now, it's all a big facade. It's not happening. And, you know, they've got a long way to go before we can actually figure this out. But there's certain people out there that want you to believe that it's already figured out. You know, that we don't need gasoline vehicles anymore. Matter of fact, we could stop today. Well, that's a bunch of you know what. And we're 20 years away from being able to seriously put a huge dent in the use of fossil fuels in this country. They've got to figure out a lot of different things for industry, you know, as far as over-the-road trucking and big shipping and air flight, for that matter. You know, when it comes to electric airplanes, give me a break. And on that note, I'm going to take a break. Be back here in just a minute. You know, it never ceases to amaze me how global events like the invasion of a small country in Eastern Europe could impact so much. You know, sometimes I wonder if that's just the news cycle and the impact it has on the psyche of people. In this particular case, though, Ukraine is pretty important when it comes to the auto industry. They manufacture a lot of different parts, not a lot of cars. I mean, there are some car factories in Ukraine, but a lot of parts for cars and a lot of parts for computer chips, some of the chemicals that are necessary to go into the manufacture of computer chips. U.S. auto retail sales for March are expected to have a pretty dramatic decline, and it's supply bottlenecks still, like we've been talking about for so long. Before it was chips, now it's everything from steel to copper to certain types of plastics, because they are reliant upon petrochemicals to be able to make them. They're talking about a 27.8% decline in March versus the same time last year. That's a big drop, and that does impact a lot of different things. A lot of it also has to do with the prices of vehicles, and people are kind of getting tired of it. And I get it. You know, the shortages are causing inflationary pressures, dealers charging more for vehicles than MSRP, and that the lack of rebates and incentives is a problem for the average household, especially when they're having to pay $4.50 a gallon for gas. It all adds up, doesn't it, folks? You know, there are ways that you can save money and be careful with the dollars that you do have. People don't think about fuel economy until something like this happens. At least most people don't. You can see a lot of driving behaviors that could improve fuel economy, just slowing down. Not the jackrabbit starts that we have gotten used to as we race somebody from the red light in some imaginary Formula One race. You know, that kind of stuff can really improve your fuel economy up to 20%. Just driving habits alone can change that. Just slow down, and it could make your life a little bit better at the pump. And I think we're probably 8 months to a year away from a more normal automotive market. It's going to take a while. As long as we don't have any more major disruptions, you know, as long as the Russians don't take over, try to take over some NATO country, and then all bets are off. But on the bright side, used car values are still at record highs. So the vehicle in your driveway right now is worth a whole lot more than it was worth a year ago. And that will offset a lot of the price increases. Because under normal circumstances, over the last 2 years, your car probably would have depreciated, I don't know, 30, maybe even 40%, depending on the mileage that you drive. It's actually not gone down in value at all. Matter of fact, it's gone up in value. And so that's, yes, it's kind of the same. And money's money, right? So that's about the same as a rebate and a discount way off, you know, maybe close to the invoice, maybe even better than that. Interest rates are still pretty low. And so financing is available even for people who have marginal credit. So there's a lot of good things going in the market. So it's not all gloom and doom. If you need help with anything, don't hesitate to give me a call, 423-552-2020. I'll be glad to advise you in automotive-related questions, at least. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we will see you tomorrow.